back. Welcome back to Deep Thinking, the one, the only, the original, the inimitable motorcycle road racing podcast. He is
number 36.
It's number 36. He is Ed Sorbo, who is ensconced in a secret location in case I am unable to perform my duties as the master of reality. Thank you, Black Sabbath. And I am Ed.
You are Michael Gugis.
Right, and you can find my photographs, my motorcycle action photographs on the web at motorbikeroadracing.smugmug.com. You can find Ed Sorbo's wit and wisdom, actually, insights about suspension at Lindemann Engineering's website at le-suspension.com. Is that correct, Ed?
That's correct, and this is Tiki Dog, the neighborhood dog.
Tiki,
and you can find him by simply bringing a treat to my neighborhood, and he'll find you.
He'll show up, right? He'll handle the rest.
I walked out to the shop to close up when Michael called so we could make the show tonight, and I opened the door, and Tiki was inside. I don't even know how he got in this time. So now he's hanging out on my patio drinking water, and that was him sneezing.
That is so awesome.
He sticks his whole face in the bowl. He doesn't just lick the surface. He just puts his nose in until it stops when it hits the ground on the bottom of the bowl.
And then
he starts licking, and then he sneezes after he drinks.
That's
pretty funny.
That's efficiency, Ed.
It's also a way to clean your nose.
I love it. Well, we've got a lot to talk about.
Where were you this past weekend?
I was hanging out with the parents and doing that sort of thing. The weekend before, I was up at Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca for the World Superbike Moto America weekend, which was with obviously one very, very tragic incident. Generally, a really, really positive weekend. Hey, Ed, ask me where I watched the races from.
So when you were at Laguna Seca this past weekend, Michael, hanging out with your buddies that you've been hanging out at the same place for 400 years watching motorcycle races,
25
where exactly
years.
Did you watch it from?
One of the hospitalities above Turn 1. And I have
was that comfortable? Did you have a big screen and hors d'oeuvres and a chair?
Well, didn't have a big screen, but there were some smaller screens inside, and it was not hors d'oeuvres. These were full meals, and I'm going to go on the record with this, Ed. I'm not ashamed of this. I'm going to say that's the best catered food I have had in my life. Not the best food, but the best catered food.
The best catered food. Well, I mean, right.
Ever
yeah,
had
exactly.
in
you
my life.
Expect. Yeah.
That stuff was rocking.
They bring it to you, and it costs you $12 to buy a soda outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty good deal.
Exactly. All the monsters I wanted, shoot me. Ed, do you know what I came away from that weekend thinking after watching from up there?
Why don't you tell us?
Ed, why don't you tell me what Turn 1 at Laguna Seca is like at speed?
It's actually quite simple, as long as you know to look into the far distance, and we talked about this before. You pick the third telephone pole on the left as you approach the crest, and then it's no problem.
Yeah.
But if you think about how fast you're going and how there's a wall on the right side and all that stuff, it can be somewhat intimidating.
Somewhat intimidating. That, friends, is understatement. Now imagine doing that on a full-blown, full-boogie, 220-horsepower superbike. And
I'm telling you, they're all working a lot harder in Turn 2 than we work in Turn 1.
I know it
looks spectacular. I know it's scary the first few times. But, you know, a pro-level racer, that's a pretty simple burn.
Well, hold on a second. Let's throw in one other thing. Let's throw in changeable conditions where it used to be wet and it's half wet, half dry when they throw you out there. Now what's coming over Turn 1 like?
Well, those conditions take the fun out of every corner, you know. So it's you just have to roll out a little bit because if the wheel's already spinning and then you get a damp patch, you know, it can get away from you pretty quick.
Yeah.
Turn the track pistol up to save my ass and just keep it pinned.
Oh my God. Ed, I have just a whole new level of appreciation. Let me describe to you what it looked like from being right up above Turn 1 when those guys came blasting by, okay? First off, you can visibly see the bike starts to drift just a little bit, okay? I mean, it
drifting is good.
Drifting is good as they come over the crest of that with their knee nearly on the ground, okay? That's not so bad. the you can hear the electronics kicking in, which is kind of cool. You can hear it monitoring the rear wheel spin. But when the bike, when the weight of the bike settles back onto the wheels, okay, they're pretty much straight up and down. The whole bike compresses. It looks like at that speed, it looks from the side of the track, it looks like the thing's bottom, front, and rear. The rear steps out. The rear goes sideways, and they keep it pinned because the brakes and the electronics are so good on those bikes that they're into the rumble strips on the right before they let off and go down five gears to go into turn two. Freaking amazing! It is.
It should be four gears to go into turn two.
No,
second gear.
No, no. You could actually hear them. They had a fairly high first gear in some of those bikes, and you could hear five downshifts.
Okay. The thing to remember is the faster you go, the more gyroscopic stability you get from the wheels and the crankshaft. And so, yes, it's fast and it's rushing at you, and there's lots of stuff going on. But by looking far enough in the distance and acclimatizing to the speed, that's no longer an issue. And so when you're going faster, yeah, the bike is doing all that stuff you described.
Right.
But the bike is also more stable. And so if the bike bottoms the suspension in a 20-mile-an-hour corner, that's a lot bigger of a problem.
Right.
Than when it does it when you're moving forward so fast. It's almost like you just can't fall down in that amount of time.
Oh, I could find a way to fall down, Ed.
Keep going forward.
I'm pretty sure I could find a way to fall down.
So that's the really tricky part, right?
Right.
There's that in-between speed where, let's say you're a motocross rider, and in my speed, I ride up and down all the whoop-de-doos like they're bumps. And at the pro level, right, you skip over the top of them. When you're in the in-between, where you can skip like three of them, and then you drop down, and then you have to skip two of them, that's a lot harder.
Yes.
So I'm not saying turn one at Laguna Seca is not a difficult, challenging corner, but I am saying that it's not as traumatic as it appears when you're viewing it from the outside, nor as traumatic when you're riding your poorly set up track day bike. Oof. Over it on your first weekend.
I'll tell you, it was funny. One of the food servers came out for the World Superbike race. She and one of her friends, and they're like, "Okay, what's going on?" And I'm like, "Okay, here's what's happening. They come over this turn, they're full throttle, and I'm pointing to the right towards turn two. I said, they're letting off the throttle right there. Do you hear it?" And you could actually hear when it wasn't very crowded. You could obviously hear when they let off the gas, right? She says, "Okay." I said, "Now let me explain to you something. I've ridden here. Let me show you where I let off." And instead of pointing to the right, I pointed to the left over near the start finish line. I said, "Now as I come over at the top of the rise here, you start to hear some sobbing from inside of my helmet." Ed, I have another question about World Superbikes at Laguna. Okay.
Okay, but before we get there, let me remind you that you've got the timer.
I do.
I don't have one.
I do.
Yeah.
Let's see.
You got the one on the recorder. I forgot my stopwatch.
Oh, hey, Ed, we don't have time to listen to you tonight, man.
Item number, and remember, when you back off and you coast over the crest of turn one at Laguna,
right,
that's what's making it so difficult. If you stay on the gas, the bike will be a lot happier, and you'll have a lot less problems. So what was item number two about Laguna?
Item number two. Ed, have you ever had a teammate on your that you've had to race against?
A teammate I've had to race against?
Yeah. Because I know you've been a one-man band for a long time out there on the GP circuit.
No. I mean, I've done endurance racing. You don't race against those guys.
No.
I race against my friends at sprint races. But you're talking about like you've got a team,
right,
one sponsor, and multiple riders. I've never had to deal with that problem.
World Superbike. Okay.
Yep.
Tom Sykes gets a slightly better start in both races than Jonathan Ray. Those are the two factory Kawasaki guys. Okay. Ray is clearly faster. Clearly faster. Anytime Sykes pulls out a second, Ray can close it within a lap. But whatchamacallit, Laguna is a very difficult place to try to make a pass, right? So
yep.
Sykes, for more than 20 laps per race, rides the defensive line, lets Chaz Davies on the Ducati clear off into easy victories, and holds on to second and keeps his teammate in third. Question, is there, in your professional racer opinion, is there a point when you let your teammate by?
You cut out a little bit there, but I'm pretty sure I got the question. And the answer is, it depends on how it's being instructed and what the pay system is.
The pay system?
I'm pretty sure that, they both get paid whatever they get paid for their positions, and they don't get some kind of bonus from the team for, helping the teammate out and all that stuff. I mean, this was an issue near the end of last year, wasn't it?
Right.
With two other guys?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, that's interesting. So if you...
This is why Rossi works so hard to not make people, hate him. So they won't try that extra little bit, and so that if he's in a teammate situation... they are willing to work with him.
I heard Nikki Hayden once say that too, and that sort of struck me as one of the smartest things I've ever heard a competitor say, which was, I don't want to give anybody else a reason to dislike me on the track. Then they're going to try that much harder to beat me.
Yeah, hate is a great motivator.
No kidding.
So it's a tough one, right? And that's the killer team manager situation. And you'd think by now that these teams would have, talked about this before it all starts. So that the guys know what's expected of them, but it sounds like, they don't. And also, right from the viewer's point of view, you can't be sure. I mean, maybe somewhere on the track he was, giving him a chance to get by, and he never took it. I don't know.
No. They came side by side from the corkscrew all the way down to 11. I mean, side by side. It looked hairball,
If he had passed, if Rhea had passed, and then you would expect him to run down and pass the guy who's leading the race, right?
Right.
Or if he can do that, why can't he do it to his teammate?
Because you're on equal bikes, and that's the difference. The Ducati.
Yeah, okay, you're on equal bikes, but if one guy's better than the other guy, that would be the guy who's in front. Right. The start is part of the race, right? It wasn't a rolling start.
The guy in front is the guy who's faster. End of discussion,
right?
Ed says.
And the set up and all the other lines, that's all part of it.
I like your worldview. Simple, functional, to the point. It was really funny because in the post-race comments, Ray was clear. He's like, I was faster than Tom. And Tom Sykes was like, yeah, I think Jonathan was probably faster than me, so I had to, what was his phrase? I had to manage the situation.
Well, then that's pretty clear that's what he did, and it'll be up to the team to decide if they want to do something about it. But, that thing about I was faster than him, everybody says that. I remember a guy telling me one time that the reason he crashed was because I was going so slow in front of him. Right? This is not somebody who was coming up to lap me and I fucked up, the line or something like that.
Right.
The guy who was racing me, he was behind me. And I was going so slow, but I was in front of him. Whatever, dude. Right?
I like Ed Sorbo, team manager. Your motto: you don't win, you don't eat. I love it. All right, we have about 7 minutes left. This is hysterical. I'm knocking out this podcast in a classroom that I have commandeered at an undisclosed school location. I have to deliver a final in 7 minutes. So this is going to be funny.
We got to talk about my Miller weekend.
How did Miller go?
Miller went fantastic. We had a huge turnout.
Excellent.
We had a lot of, perfect weather. It was a great weekend altogether. Actually, I'm thinking the stories I got about Miller are more than 7 minutes. It sounded like you had something else to talk about from World Superbike.
Nah, not really. Tell me the first story about Miller.
Well, the main thing, and I've been thinking about this since I talked about the problems I saw at the ARMA race weekend that
right.
we talked about.
Right.
And I don't remember if I named ARMA as the B and the guys having these problems, but I've decided now that I'm going to name people.
You're naming names.
That need to improve.
Okay.
And so I was doing tech inspecting for WERA, and we were doing our normal thing, and the vast majority of the local Utah club guys who came to race with us, when I pointed out to them that their coolant drains were not drilled or wired or siliconed or anything, every single one of them, I'm talking 20 guys or so, looked at me with a completely blank look on her face and said something along the lines of, we don't have to, or their tech inspector never told them to, yada, yada, yada. They were clearly this was the first time that they'd come up with any of them. And so I found out, I checked with the local club official, they do have a rule that says you have to safety wire the coolant drain, but apparently the tech inspectors with that club have not been doing anything about it for around a year or maybe more.
Wow.
And all of these guys also clearly didn't read the rule book, right? Because if they read the rule book, they would have saw that you got to safety wire the drain plug. And in fact, if you read a rule book and saw that it didn't require you to drill the drain plug, wouldn't you ask about that? Because, you know, coolant drains, oil drains, that seems pretty obvious that you should be safety wiring those.
Takeaway
from that is, read the rule book, people. I mean, come on. It's not just your ass. It's my ass and everybody else's ass.
Thank you, Ed.
Oil or whatever.
Right. You're not getting away with something. All you're doing is telling me as your fellow racer how little you care about my safety.
Be
absolutely.
Careful, Michael. You were out without a coolant drain.
I know because I didn't read the rule book. It was a bad day. I had the sun in my eyes.
Continue on. Remember we talked about where I said that when you come rolling up to me and I'm doing tech inspection, I'm looking at you and I already know if you have your shit together or not from one glance. Remember that?
Right.
So that this R6 comes up to tech inspection. The guy, first of all, has a mohawk on his helmet. Okay? And he's dirty and disheveled. Okay? We sent his bike back. You go back and fix this shit before you bring your bike to us again. Because first he had the lowers on still. And now, you know, we understand. And if we can see the drain plug and the filter and whatever, we'll try to help people out and not make a special trip just for the lowers.
By the way, right there, this guy's lower. Go ahead.
What?
I said,
guy's lowers had oil in them. Fresh, clean oil, maybe a millimeter spread out across the whole bottom. And at the first glance, the coolant drain was also not drilled. So we sent him back. Okay, so he came back hours later with the problem fixed. The oil filter was on loose, and that's why it was leaking. And so there's the catch fairing, protecting all those people that were in the track day that day, doing a great job, et cetera, et cetera. So fast forward to Sunday, I overhear some other racers on 600s talking about a guy, and it turns out to be this guy, because he's the only guy at the track with a mohawk. And it turns out, unsurprisingly, that he has no idea where he's supposed to go, what a line is, and whatever stupid line he's using, he's not even using the same stupid line lap after lap. He goes to different places all the time. These guys were talking about how scary it was to be around him, how desperate they were to get by him as soon as they could, and all that kind of stuff. So I think that just proved my point, right, that the troublemakers are the dumb ones who don't know or don't care or whatever. It's a really small percentage, right? And you're just going to find them and get that shit under control to protect all the rest of us. The rest of us were not doing anything that crazy. And my final thing for the Miller trip, I'll save all the other good stuff for later,
is
the motorhome has the conventional van engine, and there's an AC unit attached to that, as we all know, just like in your car or your truck. But it also has a generator and a roof house-style AC. Fortunate, because while driving up to Miller, the van AC stopped working properly, and I didn't have the ability to fix it on the road. So I turned on the roof AC, but that doesn't really get the cab area very cool. So I stopped at the local Walmart, and you know what I got?
Oh, no. Tubing.
The dryer vent hose, yep. You know, the flexible dryer hose.
Right.
And a few zip ties and a duct tape, and I connected to one of the vents in the roof that's blowing cold air, and it's blowing cold air straight down on top of my head for the drive home through Vegas coming back yesterday.
Cool head Ed. That's what your nickname.
Like
that's
that
your
one.
Nickname is going to be.
How are we on time?
We're doing almost done. Two things, real quick. Number one, first off, anybody who's listening to this that does tech inspection, in communication, we call it problem orientation versus control. What you said about if somebody rolls up with the lowers on, and you can see the drain plug, and you can see the oil filter, and you know it's safety wired, there's no sense in being dogmatic and saying, lowers must be off, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, if you've got time, and the tech inspector's goal is to help people get onto the track in as safe a way as possible. We're not there to close the gate on people.
And just out of, you know, just to be blunt here, okay, or just to be very clear, I've seen people screw up putting the lowers back on and create a worse situation.
Absolutely. Well, plus, every single one of us, all tech inspectors ever, have all made mistakes, like show up at tech and go, oh, shit, I've got to take my lowers off, right?
Right.
Now, if you could overhear the guy in the pits going, watch this, I'm going to leave my lowers on, fuck those guys. Well, no, that's not cool.
Not acceptable.
Right?
But if you talk to the tech guys and go, hey, look, you know, like on my R1, it's not just Zeus fasteners. There's three bolts and a zip tie. It's a positioning zip tie, not a structural one. But it's more effort. You know, it's more effort than normal to get that off. If I go talk to the tech guys and say, hey, if I bring this bike over and you can see everything, is that cool? And they, it's great if they say, cool, yeah, we can work that out.
Right. When you do it like that, you're demonstrating that you have a plan, you're paying attention, there's this extraordinary problem, exactly, right? It's the guy who shows up, you know, and he doesn't even know that he's got fucking a cup of oil in his lowers already.
All right, here's point number two. How did this person get into the facility with a Mohawk on his helmet? Why didn't the gate person just turn them away at that point? Maybe the helmet wasn't visible.
He was a racer. Presumably the bike was in a vehicle and the helmet was in a bag.
Well, I think the helmet... Maybe we need to do helmet inspections at the gate. And just check for Mohawks. Check for Mohawks. Ed, it's time. So, as I mentioned to you before we started this one, our two-minute board is simply going to take place after our podcast is over. We want to... spend a moment in remembrance of a couple of our colleagues who died at Laguna Seca. It's a reminder of the stakes that we play for, and a reminder that we do this because it means so incredibly much to us. So for Bernat Martinez and Daniel Fernandez, aloha, guys.